Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, my fan friends, and welcome to another edition of Rahalastapat. Rahalastata! Stop saying that, you ventriloquist dummies over there. This week's guest is Marek Larwood. I can't believe we haven't had him on before. He's a comedy genius. Check out his YouTube stuff. Hopefully we'll get him back live sometime. This is a really good episode. Hey, look, if you would like a copy of his amazing card game Pooh Man, which I completely recommend, brilliant for kids but fun for adults too, go to poohman.co.uk. Please buy them from me. I'd love to turn this into the greatest game of all time. I am also giving away 10 copies of this game to monthly badgers at the end of December. So if you're not a monthly badger yet and you'd like to win one of those card games, all you have to do is to get in the draw is become a monthly badger. GoFasterStripe.com/badges. There's also a big end of year draw for a big box full of prizes. We do those every month, but it's especially good at the end of the year. You also get hundreds of backstage videos, extra interviews with most of the guests, stand-up shows, some other bonus bits of material backstage, including Taskmaster watch-alongs with the Taskmaster show in them. Illegally. Lots of other. Hannah McBella's putting all kinds of stuff. You get a membership badge, you get a membership card, you get secret codes, all sorts of things. You get exclusive emails, offers, and you can win. 10 people who are monthly badgers are going to win a pack of Pooh Man cards. So do become a monthly badger. GoFasterStripe.com/badges. There'll be extra competitions and stuff like that as we go on. And extra bits of nonsense to give to you. Anyway, have a lovely, lovely Christmas coming up very soon. And next week, the Christmas episode is Rod Gilbert, which is another cracker. So do look out for that. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Marek Larwood. Yes, it's me. Hello, I've just beamed in. It's me, Richard Herring. Welcome to Richard Herring's Loving Star Trek podcast. You've got to come up with a good theme for your podcasts these days. There's so much competition. And I thought, what do people on the internet like? They like Star Trek. So now the whole show is just going to be about Star Trek, good episodes of Star Trek, what the good characters. I don't really watch that much Star Trek. So it's going to be difficult for me to host this, but hopefully the guest, I didn't tell him it's all going to be about Star Trek. Hopefully he will be primed and ready to go. Though I was talking to that green dancing lady from off of the end credits of Star Trek the other day, and she calls it Rahalastapus. I don't know if that's going to catch on. My son is 3 years old. He's come up with a fantastic catchphrase. Both of my kids are way more better at being lavatorial than I was. I, as a 3-year-old to probably a 14-year-old, I would walk around the house saying, usually nude, saying wee wee poo poo bottom, and thought that was hilarious. It was the repetition of it that made it amusing to me. My family didn't like it. My daughter talks about pooing in people's faces and stuff, which is cleverer than what I was doing, and eating bums. My son's new one he's come up with, he says to me, you farted in your nappy, which I think is a brilliant insult, because A, it's saying I wear a nappy, which, you know, is solid gold. I mean, I'm not far away from wearing a nappy again, but I don't at the moment. To a 3-year-old, that is funny because he's potty trained, so he can do that. But also, you farted in your nappy. Come on. It's like you couldn't even poo in your nappy. You tried to poo in your nappy and you couldn't even do that. And you just farted. That is very sophisticated. He finds it. Sometimes he says you pooed in your nappy and that's not as funny. But it's very sophisticated humor for a 3-year-old. And I'm terrified both my kids will soon be more successful comedians than me, which will not be hard. The Sports Personality of the Year nominations came out yesterday or today. And I was fully expecting to have my work this year recognised, having been the only person who's kept a sporting event going all year long in myself playing snooker. But not only am I not in there, but they've picked someone from the aberration, the apocrypha, that is two-player snooker, Ronnie O'Sullivan. They know that snooker exists. They're rubbing it in my face. What do I have to fucking do to get recognised? None of my internet work's been recognised this year. What? How much internet work do I have to do? I'm on the internet all the time. That might be the problem. It may be quality, not quantity, but who knows? It's good to see the vaccines getting shipped out as well. I'm delighted about that. Some people not taking it because they're worried about the microchips, you know, that are going to be in the vaccine. But, you know, that was my plan all along. I set up COVID as a long game to get microchips into people. I thought I'll create a disease, then people have to be vaccinated. It'll take about a year, then we'll get the microchips. I should just put the microchip in the beer in Wetherspoon, shouldn't I? And then I've got all the people. I might do that as well. And look, the moustache is still there. It's not Movember any longer, but I like it. I like it so much I'm keeping it. Ooh la la. It's nearly curly at the edges. Thank you very much if you donated to Movember, which you did if you're a badger or if you've subscribed on Twitch during November. We made over £12,000 in total, including about £10,000 from subscribers. So they're very delighted at Movember. Thank you very much for that. I'm keeping this because tomorrow and Friday I'm in a film. Yeah, you heard me, my fine friends. I'm in a film, a movie film, like in the movies. Playing a big part. It just takes 2 days to film because they wanted to get all my stuff into 2 days because I'm such a big star. So that's exciting. I'm doing another little interactive thing next week as well. That's 2 acting jobs in 2 weeks. I'm back in the big time. Tipping Point. I won £6,000 on Tipping Point. I have to give it to charity, apparently. I'm annoyed about that. But I got a robe. I meant to bring it up to show it to you. I forgot. And still got the Taskmaster finale 3 weeks to go. 10 points behind third place. I've blown it, haven't I? Do you think I've blown it? Looks like I've blown it. Anyway, I might keep the moustache. We did another Peter Dibden sketch today. And we're going to do at least another couple. So I'll keep it for that. Anyway, enough of my yapping. My guest this week is probably best known for his portrayal of Bear in I Want My Hat Back, which genuinely is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. He was also, and I wanted to make this the thing he was best known for, he was in some kind of schools program audio thing with me in 2004. I did talk to him about it beforehand because I couldn't remember what it was called, nor can he, and he'd forgotten about it, and I'd forgotten about it until I heard a bit of it somewhere on the radio or something, and his friend, who's a teacher, told him that he was in it, and he'd forgotten. We'd both forgotten it. Anyway, let's welcome him. He's best known for being Barry, and I want my hat back. It is Barrett Larwood, ladies and gentlemen. There he is. Look. There he is. Bear.
Hello,
from
Richard.
I want my hat back.
Hello,
it's Bear.
Everybody.
It's Bear.
It's Did Bear. You know that that's just been released?
Has it?
On the National Theatre Live website.
I did
in the
not.
Archive.
People must watch it. It's absolutely excellent. I don't usually choose something excellent.
I'm a bit thrown. I'm a bit thrown because there's quite a lot of shit on my IMDb.
Well, I thought it would surprise you. I don't
something
usually...
that I was actually quite good in. I mean, there's about 6% chance of that happening, but well, I'm amazed.
Thank you. Well, I did see it. Okay, I brought my daughter, and she was, I think, like one at the time. It was the second time she'd been to the theatre, and she was rapt. I have to tell you, my son is. I'd like to take my son because he's a fidgeter, but my daughter was rapt and into it. It's quite, I don't want to spoil it, people can still watch it, and I can't quite, there's some quite shocking twists
there's
and turns in
there.
There's
brutal murder in it.
Yeah.
I'll spoil it. I had to basically kill the rabbit by snapping its neck.
Yes.
And I remember saying to the director, are you sure I should do this? And there's a guy, I don't know what the instrument is. What's the one that with a bit of wood with lots of grooves in it?
Oh, yeah, a harp?
It was
zither.
You know, music lessons at school was like the last one to get picked when everyone had to pick an instrument. Oh, no, I've got that. Really, okay. Like a massive sausage with lots of...
Okay, yeah. Ocarina.
And he would, ocarina, mate, let's call it that. He would make the neck snapping sound with that.
Wow.
So if you want to make any neck snapping sounds at home, that's the instrument you need to use for it.
Yeah. And what are your memories of the thing that neither of us can remember that we were both into the one time we've worked together? You'd think it would have stuck in our minds, this... Is it the one time we worked together? Maybe we've been on.
I think it probably is.
Yeah. I don't remember. I can't. Hills Barker was in it. I'd forgotten that.
It must have been so traumatic that we blocked it out. We must have hated each other so much.
I don't get many acting jobs, so I should remember it. You know, it was quite exciting for me. I was asked to do something. And
you've got one tomorrow.
I know.
Do you want... I was going to say to you, you should be learning lines, not be listening, doing a podcast.
I'll learn. I'll do it on the night. I'll do it on the night.
That's tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight is
I think,
the line learning.
The thing with me now, I used to be so good at learning lines, and I can still remember things from 20 years ago. But
except
the
radio shows we did together.
Yeah, I can't remember doing that. But I can still remember lines, and you know, and when I've learnt really complicated things. But there's no point in me trying to. I've familiarised myself with the script. It's only one speech, really, one main speech, and then I've got to ad lib something. But I just—it doesn't stick in, so I might as well just wait till just before I do it. It's quite—it's a little chunk. It's a chunky speech, and then
what
I'm
sort
this...
of character are you playing? Do you want to work on the character? Do some character
well,
work?
Well, I sort of think it's she's left very free rein. It's got to be over the top. I'm a showbiz ex rock star, possibly dad, so I'm quite flamboyant. But it's she said I can overact as much as I want.
Playing yourself, really? It's not
yeah.
for me.
It is. He's got a moustache. I think it's... I'm picturing if they had a budget and it was a bigger part, I think Bill Nighy would be playing this role. But instead,
oh, he always plays that role.
Yeah, but...
Everything.
So I'm going to try and channel him a little bit, but I don't think I could be quite Bill Nighy. But that's what I sort of think is. I'm a little bit young. I'm playing Nick Helm's dad in it, actually. He's the brother.
What's the age? It's only about
he's
30 years between
he's 13
you?
Years younger than I am. So he's not more my little brother. I mean, I sort of see him as a comedy nephew rather than a son. So I think they're going to age me up a bit. I imagine they'll put some grey in this.
Or do you say, you know, I was banging girls when I was 13? Do you say that as you're at 7 and goes, oh, right. Do you remember I got your mum pregnant when I was... Establish
possible.
That.
It's possible.
Say that, right, the first line.
It's in a church. I'm at a funeral. I think it's appropriate. So, yeah, I think it should be fun. We'll see. And then I'm playing some kind of Bond villain next week. I haven't even looked at the
Bond.
Well,
the
it's a
Bond
sort of
villain.
It's like a Bond villain. I mean, it's like an interactive. It's Craig who usually does the camera work for this show, but who's been made redundant by a computer. You. Yeah, well, oh. by this. Look, that's what Craig does. He can't even. I can just put a sticker thing on my desk, and that's as good as Craig. So he's had to go into directing films. And so I'm doing an interactive something or other with him. But I haven't looked at that yet. And I played Peter Dibden, the driving instructor today, with Stevie Martin, the fantastic actor.
I saw your Peter Dibden on Chortle.
Did you? I did a second. Well, it's not actually the second one. It's a Christmas one we did today, because I haven't written the second one yet, but I've written the Christmas one. So that's been... So, yeah, I'm back in the game, man. I'm back in... I'm like you.
It's a new phase. Well, I'm going the other way. I barely get any work.
Well, so tell me, you've moved back to the Isle of Wight, is what I've gleaned so far from our...
For listeners, I'm in tier one,
yeah,
which has just been announced. So I'm in the most, I'm the safest place in the whole of the UK. It's just old people and me. I like to think I am responsible for it becoming tier one.
Yeah,
I've got my gun turret up in the top of the house. Anyone who looks like they've got COVID,
yeah, bang,
take them out. Done.
I think that's a good idea. I think the Isle of Wight was where, in the Triffids, they went. There was a community on the Isle of Wight that was safe from the Triffids. They got rid of all the Driffids on the Isle of Wight.
Do you know why? That yes, they could, because they had people monitoring the shores for Triffid seeds.
Yes,
so they could kill all the Triffids, and then and that was part of my reasoning in moving here for the COVID. Yeah. I could oncoming ships. You just got defences.
Yeah,
or old people. A lot of the old people here are quite happy to give their lives away to defend the island.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it's interesting. I looked on Wikipedia. You were born in Norwich, you moved to Wales, and then you moved to the Isle of Wight. It was like you were trying to find the weirdest place with the weirdest people to live. No offence to people in Norwich and Wales and the Isle of Wight, but you're all fucking weird. And you've lived in all of those three places and then settled on the Isle of Wight.
And I am surprisingly normal.
You are very normal. For the Isle of Wight, you are a normal bloke. When you come to the mainland.
I used to do loads of jokes when I first started doing stand-up about the Isle of Wight. And then I got on the ferry back to visit my parents. And an old school friend started shouting at me in the queue to the ferry, saying, "I can't believe you've got the nerve to..." I mean, she was a bit nuts. "I can't believe you've got enough to take the piss out of the Isle of Wight, send wool in bread." And I'm there in the very queue. So, "Oh, no, I didn't. I was only joking." And everyone was turning around looking at me. But let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that, because now that's where you live.
That's where I live now, yeah.
Right, so what do you get on tier? What's tier one? What are you allowed to do? Anything you're allowed to do? Anything you're allowed to kiss?
Discos.
Yeah.
Full on French kissing.
French kissing with
up,
the old lady.
Up to half an hour. Go to the old people's home, mild fingering.
As long as it's mild. As long as it doesn't get too rough, it's fine. Yeah, it's not that kind of show, Marek, where people are
sorry.
Crude.
Sorry.
It's a crude show where we talk about that for the first 5 minutes. We're only minute 13.
Oh, right. Are you allowed to go to pubs?
Okay.
But I don't really go anyway. So it's just where I live, it's just. I'm the youngest person on my street by 20 years. Easily by 20 years. And they all sort of slightly hate me.
Yeah.
My neighbour, every time I leave my house, go out the front door, he basically asks me to dig up this root he can't dig up in his garden. And he's asked me like 7 or 8 times if I can do it. Well, my brother told him that I was an actor and comedian. And he basically... absolutely hates me for no reason. So he's there gardening with his wife, and his wife will ask me what I'm doing. I said, "Oh, I'm doing some bits of, you know, painting and stuff like that." And I can see him, he starts to sneer, like, "What, painting?" Yeah, and I can see he doesn't, because he's like in his 60s or 70s, he's got no desire to hide the fact that he hates me. He doesn't care anymore. All he wants me to do is dig up the weed in his garden. That's pretty much how exciting my life is, Richard.
And so, is it permanent? Is it a permanent move to the Isle of Wight? Is that's? It seems an extreme decision, but I can understand.
Well,
I
was in London for 20 odd years. And how long are you in London for? 21 years.
I was in London for about that 20, 30, no, 25 years maybe. Yeah.
And then you just pay rent as you. Well, I was renting all your money in rent, and then basically what happened was my nan, who's really old, moved out of this house into. With my parents. So I sort of help them look after her, and I just moved in here because it was empty and just paid the bills rather than pay £1 million in rent. It's just cheaper to get a hotel in London and live in a you might as well just go and stay in a Travelodge for one day. It's a total piss take.
It is very expensive. And do you find, because you're doing a lot of stuff online now, I mean, I don't know if that's, I mean, it's not just lockdown, because I know I've been looking at your sites, which are amazing, and there's stuff going back years. So I know you've been an early adopter of getting stuff up on YouTube, but you have been doing lots of stuff in lockdown, haven't you?
You wouldn't think I've been doing it for years with the number of subscribers. Basically, like everyone else, when it happened, I remember calling my agent, and she said to me, "Oh, it's only January and February. Things will pick up around March, April time." Oh, right. So I just shit myself in April, as everyone else did. And I just started thinking, what can I do? I just started painting masterpieces in 15 minutes and flogging them on eBay.
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary. So you film this, and you're a good, very good artist. I mean,
I've treat for you, Richard.
Yes.
This afternoon, this is why I feel like I'm in a dream, because I listened to podcasts and just looking at a picture of you and painting it. And I did this. It's about two hours.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to send this to you.
Okay.
There we go.
It's good.
And I thought you could put that, and this will, all the people listening to the podcast will immediately go to YouTube. She'll get hundreds of extra advert hits.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll send this to you. So your wife can put it on the wall when you go on tour.
That's nice.
This is you laughing at Adam Buxton.
I think it's a bit more handsome than I am. That's the problem. I think I'll come back and she'll be disappointed. Like, I think the teeth are a bit better than my actual teeth.
That's the thing. When you start doing teeth, if you do the lines in them, I didn't know how much dirt to put in them.
Yeah, a bit more. Just yellow them up a bit.
Feel free to do that. Put that in at home.
Myself. Oh, that's very, very nice. And that is absolutely genius. But I love the YouTube thing of you creating these artworks, which I'm presuming is genuinely in 15 minutes.
Yeah, some prick had the audacity to say to me, "Oh, right, you're not doing these 15 minutes." So I put up one. I did a Lichtenstein one.
Yeah.
I just literally went, "All right, you dickhead." Oh, and just uploaded the whole 15 minutes of me just painting in the 15 minutes. Of course, it's got me repeating myself and me going, and all those horrible sounds you had out. But I mean, what would be the point in doing it in cheating? Have you not seen them? A lot of them are shit. They're shit. So why would I do an extra 20 minutes on something that?
And how much do you sell them for? You're doing the YouTube, you get some advertising revenue from YouTube, maybe.
Okay. I think there's a myth about YouTube. People think we earn millions.
Yeah.
I work out I get £1 for every 1,000 views.
Okay.
And each of my videos gets almost 1,000 views. So each video is £1.
Yeah, we'd never bothered trying to monetize YouTube for that reason, because it's not.
Yeah,
although
it's
I think I've over the whole course of, and it must be the same for you, over the course of all the things I've ever done, it's like quite it was a surprisingly huge. I mean, it's something like 13 million hits or something. I think over everything I've ever done.
Mine's nowhere near that.
It might have been 1 million, but it was still like loads. So maybe I should have done it, but there we go. Yeah. So you sell, how much do they sell? How much do the works of art sell for?
About £30 normally.
Okay. That's not bad. That's 30 quid for 15 minutes work. £31.
Plus 10 hours editing. But I've enjoyed it though. I didn't realise. My biggest thing I found out was that Lichtenstein just nicked everything. Did you know this about him?
I didn't know, no. I haven't seen this one.
So what's the best thing about doing these paintings is I normally watch a documentary, and a brilliant 80s documentary on YouTube, and there's one about Lichtenstein. There's a guy who really hates Lichtenstein because he basically just went down the comic shop, bought some comics from the 1950s, cut out the frames, projected them onto the screen, got him, sometimes he didn't even paint them, he got his assistant to paint them, and was selling them for about £1 million, and he gave the comic book artist no credit. And there's a brilliant website called Uncovering Lichtenstein or something, and this guy's gone and found all the actual frames that were the basis of Lichtenstein's pictures. So
that's not on, is it? That's not good.
It's out of order.
That's not nice. Look, there's loads of great stuff on the YouTube channel as well. My wife had reminded me, and I'd forgotten about it because I forget everything. So I watched it again with fresh eyes. My absolute favourite one you did, and I don't know when you did this, was the Guess Who, the expert, the semi-professional Guess Who guy who was playing Guess Who and coming up with other questions that you could ask to choose the Guess Who. I mean, there's no point in discussing it other than to say, Google that, people at home, and find it. It is just, every time I've watched it, I have absolutely pissed myself laughing.
That's the thing with Guess Who. I mean, it gets boring when you do the standard questions.
Yeah.
If you say, like, who's had the longest prison sentence, who would you not leave babysitting your children?
Yeah, it works. I mean, it just works, and it's fun, and they're very funny categories. So do check that out. But that does lead me on. We'll talk about all the things you're up to. Does lead me on to, you're an inventor of games yourself. So you've invented a sport and a card game. So let's talk about the card game.
Well, my dad's an inventor.
Yeah.
And basically I come up with ideas and he starts making these ideas without consulting me.
Right.
And starts spending my money. And it's originated, I'll show you, this is a picture, this is what I've bought. This here is his first thing he did, which is a pill cutter.
Yeah, I saw a video about this today, yes.
Yeah, and my mum had arthritis in her hand, and she couldn't get a pill cutter from anywhere.
Yeah.
So my dad thought, I'll just order one. This is like 2005 or something. He ordered 20,000 from China.
Yeah.
And the first batch came, they had the razor blades in the wrong way round, so he had to send them all back. And in that time, all the main shops started selling them.
Oh.
And he basically he put an advert on the Daily Mail. He sold 35. So we had all these everywhere. Anyway, how Wolfsburg as a sport came about.
Yeah.
So I went to watch the American football at Wembley. Do you remember Lee Bannard? Do you remember two gigs with Lee Bannard?
No, I don't think so. It rings
John
a bell.
Nichol, a couple of comedians.
No, Phil, yeah.
And we got in a queue. You know, you just queue up for things. When you just see a massive queue, like, this must be good.
Yeah.
It's a queue. And we queued for half an hour and it was just a queue to the shop selling key rings. And we felt a block. When we queued for that long, you think, I'm just going to buy something anyway. Okay, buy that for a fiver. And I said, I'm going to make it my own sport and start selling merchandise and make shitloads of money. And my mate Lee said, I bet you can't. Bet you 20 quid you can't. And then, so we made the bet and we spent the whole of the game trying to find websites ending in ball.
Yeah.
And basically they're all taken. Every single website ending in ball was taken. So my other friend John said, why don't you just make him a name and call it Wolfsball? So I bought the website and then I had to look at creating a sport. And I realised that when you get in your 30s and 40s, it's impossible to get like a five-a-side team out because everyone's got kids. No one gives a shit.
Yeah.
No one wants to do a sport. So I thought I'll just do a sport for three people that's non-contact, where you can pretty much stand still.
Yeah.
I told my dad about it, and the next thing I know, literally the next day, this email comes through, and I'm like, what have we done, Dad? And it's got loads of attachments on it. And he'd gone down B&Q, and he bought all the wood to make this prism. It's a bit like the thing that was found in Utah. It's a triangular prism with a hoop at the top. And we played it on the Isle of Wight about 5 years ago, and it worked.
Yeah.
And since then, I've invested about £5,000 and got pretty much no further.
Well, it looks quite... I mean, it looks like something... because it's a spinning... It's very clever. I love it. It's a circles around a spinning thing and you get... It's a bit like, I suppose, Quidditch in that you get different points for hitting different things.
Yeah,
And if you kick a ball through the hoop, you get something like 10 points, but you usually get 1 point. Is that... You get 1 point if you throw it and hit the target.
Yes, there's three circles. In the middle circle is this prism, which is 6 foot. I mean, it's aesthetically a beautiful piece of work.
You know, that's not many people have got those knocking around.
No, you have to make those.
Yeah.
At a cost of roughly, the first one, some metal welder told my dad it was £500.
Right.
And I said, all right, Dad, that's all I've got, £500. And he came back and went, Dave says it's going to be a grand now. I was like, all right. And they go, the hoop's going to be extra. It cost me about £1,500, this metal, for the first prototype.
Yeah.
Anyway, you throw the ball at this thing and you all run around. There's rules on the internet. It's a great three-player sport. It's Henning Vane's favourite sport.
It's a great sport. Have you ever played Viking Cubs? Have you played Cubs?
No.
Well, it's not the same, but I've been playing that. My wife bought it for my birthday in July, and I've played it three times. I'm unbeaten. I play with my wife and a team, and that's two or three people, and it involves throwing. It's a bit like chess, though, sort of like it's a square thing, and there's a king in the middle, and you've got to throw sticks and knock down other sticks. But that it reminds me of that, and it's really, I think you'll like it. It's a great game. Your game is different, but in a similar sort of ballpark, I was going to say. That's a funny thing to say. But it's genuinely a good game. I don't think I've seen anything like it. It's sort of a mixture of basketball, Quidditch.
I used to play basketball, because I realised the whole middle bit, no one gives a shit about the middle bit.
Yeah.
That's totally redundant. Yeah. So I just did a circular sport, and everyone likes it, but I need to find someone to invest millions of pounds.
Yeah, I think that should happen. I think it's, because a comedian usually inventing a game for all this, the genesis of this idea you've explained, it would turn out to be like a joke game and it would be silly and it would be, but it genuinely, I've watched some videos of people playing it. It's genuinely exciting. It's, there's some skill in it. There's a bit of luck in it. So if you kick the ball through that hoop at the end, you can come back, which it does.
A doppel wolf ball. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. But apart from Quidditch, which is a similar, the final ball suddenly is worth way more than everything else. Too much, I would say. That you don't get many sports where someone can come back from 10 points behind and win in the last second. So it's Wolfsball. That's a VOLFS. It's a terrible name for it because saying it, there's no way of knowing what that means. But you've also invented this card game that I've bought some copies of this that I'm going to distribute to badgers. If you're not at the end of this month, so if you're not yet a monthly badger, go to gofasterstrike.com/badges to be in with a chance of winning one of 10 copies of this game. How did this... It's called Pooh Man, right? Is that the name of the card?
Yes, it's a very, very highbrow game, yeah. Richard.
I like it.
I don't know if your kids, what games they like to play. Well, I've got nieces and nephews, or nieces and nephews.
I think they would like this. They play... my son's terrible, so he'll just throw things around. It's not worth it. We actually played the Taskmaster board game with my daughter and just chose quite carefully what we did. And she was more or less the Taskmaster, but she enjoyed that. But yeah, we play some board games. I think having watched the video of this, they would, certainly my daughter would like this.
It's basically, my niece and nephew always want to play monsters.
Yeah.
It involves you, pretend to be a monster and running around. That every Christmas, my brother would come in and go, all right, I'm going to sit on my phone for a whole day.
Yeah.
And Uncle Marek will play monsters, which involves me pretending to be a monster until they start screaming and crying, and then they have 5 minutes rest and carry on again. And I thought, I can't cope with this anymore. So I tried to invent a game where I could sit down for most of it and be a monster for less. So I had these cards, and I started... I drew like a poo man on one of them. And if they turned that over, then I would turn into the poo man, just transform. It's quite terrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
And then run after them and until they I caught
break
them.
Then I realised... Did you break their necks with a little...
Yeah, I broke their necks. I mean, I said I had niece and nephews. They're all dead now after poo man. But it wasn't me, did it? It was poo man. So it's fine. So I developed this into... A deck of... my dad said I should do this. So over lockdown, I spent a day on my Mac every day on the crappy mouse pad trying to draw these characters. So basically, you put all the cards face down. There's about 30 cards. And you turn them over and you've got to collect 5 brown stars. And then you just turn... It's like, and so, for example, oh, look, I've turned over Lionel Longlog.
Yeah.
He's worth 2 brown stars. Okay. And then, Belinda Bumyorn, there's 1 brown star. And if you turn over the Poo Man, then you have to go and chase the kids.
Okay.
And there's other different cards as well.
I like that immediately because I can see now you've explained how it came about, why this is the case. But most card games don't have that interactive moment where it turns into something else. You've just got this, there's a definite, comedic genius in you, which we'll get on to. But the genius of creating these things that are, because it's so hard to create a game, right? I've often thought about it. I've tried to come up with a game with emergency questions, but it's, it's so difficult to find something that hasn't already been done. And this feels, there's elements that you might recognise from other games, I suppose, but it feels like a new thing. And having the chase as part of it is
basically,
pretty cool.
All I did was take chasing your kids around the house and make it so you can sit down more.
Sure. Well, I absolutely appreciate that. That's a fantastic thing. So we can get you can get this from your website.
Cleanman.co.uk.
Okay.
Don't be careful what you put into the internet and what you order, because I think that name may be associated with some other sort of darker websites.
But there's, you could do a book of this. I mean, because I was also listening. You know, you seem to do so many things. You run with so many different projects, and some of them go on for a while, and some of them
tend to fail.
They fail. It feels like you just get bored and want to move on to something else. I was listening to your bedtime stories, which are these very inventive. It's a very quick podcast, I think from 2018. I was listening to that this morning.
No one listened to it. Literally got about 3 listeners.
It was so good. I mean, that's a book in that. There's a book in this, isn't it? You could do a book with these characters.
I could do. The best thing is, there's 10 blank cards in there.
Yeah.
So people have been sending me their own versions of, they can invent their own Pooh Man cards. So it's great. We just get the kids to shut up and just sit there and draw. I've got some brilliant ones.
Absolute genius. For a man who doesn't have his own children, and I hope never will.
I'm quite happy not having any.
No, but for a man who doesn't have his own children, I will carry on seriously. It's the perfect thing, because they'll sit and draw. They'll like to be chased, but if you've got a little interactive thing, they will sit down and listen to it. So it's a brilliant design game. I hope it becomes, as you know, a massive, huge hit. It deserves to. How long has this been on the market for, this game?
August.
Right.
I mean, this is what happened. The first lot I bought, I realised, this is what my dad bought, the barcode.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise, it's like, those are dodgy people selling barcodes.
Right.
Did you know this?
No.
Anyone trying to sell, buy, you think you've got to buy a barcode for it. There's only one place you can get barcodes from.
Right.
So the first 500, I can't even sell. I've been sitting because they've got shit barcodes on the back of them. But I've ordered another. I mean, I need to sell another 110 to break even.
Right, we'll do that for you. We'll get. Well, we bought 10, so there you go.
Oh yes,
and
you did. So
that'll take 100. That'll take some of it down. And the people at home, I'd highly recommend it. Chris Evans, not that one, has been playing it. And says it's brilliant. And I've also on Twitter, loads of people have been mentioning it. So if it's only been going since August, I think this could be the thing that takes you into the big time. This is your big time.
Yes.
I think it is. And I think definitely do something with the characters and do something. You know, if you can make that into an immersive experience, so the game is part of, there could be a Pooh Man world. I went to Legoland with my kids. You know, there could be a Pooh Man Legoland.
Pooh World.
Yeah, Pooh World.
That's what you do. You take over. That's what Peppa Pig World was, isn't it?
Yeah.
My brother said he went there. It used to be Poulton's Park. And one side was Peppa Pig's World, which was full and twice the price.
Yes.
And it was exactly the same part next door without the pigs. No one there.
Yeah. So that's what we need to do. I'll come in. I'll just take 60% of
that
the
That sounds good
income.
To me.
Yeah, for coming up with this idea. I'm not going to do any of the work, but I hope you will. No, I honestly think that looks very exciting. There's so many things going on. Listen to his bedtime story. It's called Bedtime Stories, right, the podcast?
Yeah, I just did those. And
Do some more.
Abandoned. I lost all those. I dropped my hard drive, which had them all on there. So.
Well, copy them off the internet. They're on the internet. You could write a book of that. It reminded me a little bit of Limmy's. You know, Libby put out that book of short stories.
Oh, yeah, I started writing short stories ages ago.
Yeah.
And then I saw he put out his book and I thought, oh, shit, I can't do that now.
It's not the same, and yours are short. Yeah, they're proper short little. Some of them are like almost a line long, but they all work as the one where you were doing the woman who's called Margot, who'd watched Fargo and Argo. And then you said that was their third and second favourite films. And I was thinking, right, what is the first favourite? And I couldn't think of what it was going to be. And that's just so satisfying when you've found another film that rhymes with Argo. Let's see.
I can't even remember it.
You not remember? Yeah, so
blocked
good,
it all out. Everything that you've listened to or associated with you are blocked out.
If I'm the magnet that destroys.
Yeah.
The work you've done. Hey, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. So I think that'll be fun. We'll get back onto all the crazy. It's amazing America.
I can't believe I'm going to be a millionaire after this.
This podcast will break this. This poo man is going to be. Box. It's going to be huge. But it's fine. Look, I don't even. I'll take 70%. That's how.
70% of the 70% now.
Yeah, I was going to be 60, but because you've been so nice, I'm just going to take 70 now.
It sounds fair. Yeah. That's really good of you.
Thank you. Just for helping you out. This is because I'm promoting.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. I'll ask you an emergency question about what's Christmas like. Does the Isle of Wight have any special Christmas traditions that must do? It's like a different world. Is it different than the mainland in Christmas?
Yes, because 10% of the population die every Christmas. So there's a lot.
It's a lot of funerals. And that could be, it should be probably more. Well, no, if it's tier one, it won't be more than that this year. You're safe. Old people should go to the Isle of Wight, is what we're saying.
That's what they all do anyway.
Yeah, but they should go in more greater numbers.
Feel young, move here. It's great. You literally, I haven't got a car, so I'm cycling around on my bike. In my head, I think I'm 14 still. It's amazing.
Right, here's some Christmas emergency questions. What is the most pompous Christmas carol, in your opinion? There's some pompous Christmas carols out there. A lot of the Victorian ones are quite pompous.
The Herald Angels Sing?
Yeah.
And not really. What's the really, boring ones that don't catch on?
What about God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen? Is that a bit pompous?
Not really.
Not really. In the Bleak Midwinter?
Just a dirge. Little Donkey. I'm going for Little Donkey.
Little Donkey, okay. I like Little Donkey. What is the most unpleasant thing you've ever found in a stocking? Doesn't have to be a Christmas stocking. But it can be.
Oh, a stocking?
Yeah. In a stocking. It could be any kind of stocking.
So you're insinuating that I'm the sort of bloke who hangs around people who wear stockings?
No, I'm just saying it's a Christmas thing. You can take it as being a Christmas
or
stocking.
Or I've been looking through some old lady's stocking drawer.
Yeah.
Rooting around the legs, seeing what I could find. What's the most unpleasant thing? I think when you first touch a Satsuma.
Yeah.
And you don't know it's a Satsuma. That's not tradition. It used to be a real tradition putting Satsumas in there.
Yeah, no, it did. I was thinking today, because I had some peanuts today, and it suddenly reminded me of monkey. Do you remember getting monkey nuts at Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
Like in the shells.
Shit.
They were really bad.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen, does it? I don't do that for my kids. I don't know where you even get monkey nuts. Are you even allowed to say monkey nuts anymore? That's the kind of thing.
I'm surprised you brought it up, actually.
I'm not sure you can say that. And,
I mean, you better edit it out. It's outrageous.
My kids got 3 advent calendars each.
That's bullshit.
And like, you know, you're a little younger than me, but old enough. When we were kids, an advent calendar was literally just you opened a door and there was a picture.
I saw your tweet about it.
Yeah.
I saw it and I thought, that's exactly right. And I remember genuinely being excited. Thinking, yeah. All right, that's...
That's what I feel bad about. Not that the kids have got nice ones now. Mine have got one with Lego, and they've got two ones with chocolates. But what I feel bad about is that I was excited by the prospect of opening a thing. Probably, like a lot of people said on Twitter, we just use the same one every year, which I think we might have done as well. There was no point in getting a new one because they were all shit. And it was always like the nativity scene on the 24th. So that wasn't even a surprise. Double doors, but nativity
scene. A bell would be an early one, wouldn't it? Yeah. You get a donkey, you get an angel, Christmas tree. What else? Goat? I don't know.
They probably ran out. It's hard to get 24 things from nativity. And then we also, and then the candle was the nativity candle was the first, they were the first people, the candle makers, to work out, the chandlers, I think they're called, aren't they? They worked out that they could flog extra stuff, right? Because no one actually needed that candle. It wasn't a functional candle. You'd burn down a day, but also you'd do 3 days and then you'd forget to blow it out and then it would all burn down. And they were the first people who realized we can make more out of Advent than just some Advent calendars. They went onto candles, and then someone went, hey, why don't we put some chocolate in there? Mr. Cadbury did it. Ian Cadbury did that. And then Ian Lego.
Was it Ian Cadbury?
Ian Cadbury, yeah. He invented the chocolate.
And if he chose Cadbury rather than Ian, it wouldn't be as good as Ian's chocolate.
Yeah, well,
I quite like Ian's chocolates.
Yeah. They're always called in. Jan Lego thought I'd put some Lego in. I mean, that's crazy. And now it's just escalating. I want to know where it's going to go, because now they're selling advent calendars to adults with booze and posh chocolates and like someone with socks to get fucking advent calendars.
What? How many socks do you need?
Well, you get 24 pairs of socks and it's a big advent calendar, perfume. And I sort of think like the next, but it's escalating. It's like an arms race. Next, it's going to be someone's going to do an advent calendar that's November and December. Then it's going to be you're going to be an advent calendar for every day. You're going to have, and it's going to have like, you know, shoebox size things for every present.
People will be living in advent calendars.
They'll have to, because there'll be no room. You've got 366 potential cabinets, and you have to then refill those or just move. I suppose you just move every year.
They'll have to take over tower blocks of people and use those. People, homeless people. I don't really know what your point is.
Just things have changed, haven't they? And it's not with no monkey. There's no monkey nuts. You're not allowed to say monkey nuts. You don't get a satsuma anymore.
We need to draw the line somehow.
Yeah. Advent calendars have changed.
So you're saying that homeless people can live in advent calendars, right?
Well, they might have to. Maybe they could, once you've used your advent calendar and it's empty, they could move in, couldn't they? It could solve
the hazard. You take the presents out, and then the homeless person, they get... You have 24 homeless people.
Yeah.
They live outside the house. You do a draw. They get one number each. Oh, yes, I'm number one. But if they get... I think that's the thing. They're homeless.
Yeah.
They can get number one, which means they get warmer quicker. But they want to get 24 because that's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the double doors.
That's, 24 that's is a bigger room. So you've got to wait 23 days.
What I like about this is it's back to the true meaning of Christmas, isn't it? You're thinking of the needy, Marek. And that's what we're not. That's what's not happening in my house, where kids are eating chocolate and making me make little Lego models every fucking morning because they've got Lego. I didn't buy any of these advent calendars. I wouldn't let them have anything if it was up to me. It's my parents, my in-laws, and my sister have sent all these calendars down. One of them's like a train with little doors that you have to open like that. It's nuts.
So you're saying next year, every day, you're going to have a homeless person move into your house for December.
And live in a small space. Probably
that sounds...
too small to live in, but it's better than being outside. I'll make that pledge now. All right, that wasn't
that's good. Well done. Well done.
Question 204. Are you looking forward to watching the Mrs. Brown's Boys Christmas special this year?
Yes, what we do in my family, we tape the last year's Mrs. Brown's Christmas special.
Yeah.
And we've accumulated them all so we can watch 6 or 7 hours now.
Okay, good.
Hopefully the whole thing.
That's nice. Yeah, get the whole story.
Work out you get going. All the characters, you get the progression of the characters.
Yeah.
You get the bits. And they're still funny. The jokes are still funny.
Yeah.
A year
on. Good. You've been in a lot of things. You haven't been in Mrs. Brown's Boys, but you're not related to that bloke who dresses up as Mrs. Brown. So you've got to be related by marriage or blood.
Maybe if they want to cast... I'm on the list, Richard, I think, of people who sort of... If there's a part for someone who might have something wrong with him, I'm genuinely on that list.
Yeah.
I always remember... when my first agent, so I think you are still with, sent me to an advert casting for Aquafina, and everyone else there was like from the Ugly Agents. Every single other person. I was like, oh, right. I'm that sort of person, really. Or now, people think I'm Polish, so I get put casting for sort of Polish strongmen.
Right.
I'm neither Polish or strongman.
How did you end up with a Polish name?
So my mum, back in 1975, my mum was watching a documentary on Panorama about a Polish boy called Marek.
Okay.
And he had a heart defect. And they filmed the whole of his... He was going to have this pioneering operation.
Okay.
And they showed him in the school, first of all, before and after. And he was just there playing chess against this other boy who couldn't go outside. So the kid was like this. Ugh. And then Marek was saying, I'm very much looking forward to having the operation so I can go and play football with the other boys. Everyone speaks in RP. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then he has this, you see, this. It's so brutal. Not like today's documentaries when they've got music playing in the background. It's just stone cold silence.
Yeah,
and a blood bank on the wall with empty blood, what they call each pint of blood.
Right.
And the boy dies, basically. It's horrific. And my mum said, it's awful. And my mum said, if it's a boy, I'm going to name him Marek after the poor Polish boy who died. My friend found this documentary in the BBC archives. And I watched it thinking it would be quite funny. And it's one of the most harrowing moments I've ever seen where you see him say goodbye to his parents. And they're, bye, we'll see you tomorrow. And they don't see him tomorrow. It's awful. So I'm named after poor Polish
people. Well, no, it's good. If we can turn Pooh Man into the success it deserves to be, then that might be some consolation
to that boy.
Yeah.
Who think, oh, thank God that my life was worth something.
Oh,
later
dear.
On, someone made up a card game based on shit.
You never know. Okay. Oh, well, that's, you know, I'm sort of crying as much as laughing at that. So
it's a sad story.
It's a sad story.
And it's very harrowing.
Oh, dear. I'll ask you an emergency question. Luckily, it's the week before Christmas, so...
It's a bit like a Tiny Tim story, though, I suppose, isn't it?
It is. It's like Tiny Tim, except he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did my daughter call him? My tiny called him... I can't remember. We were watching the Scrooge, Scrooge McDuck Christmas Carol, and she said, is Tony died or something, she said. Tiny Tony
or Tony Tim.
Yeah, Tony. Oh, dear. It's all there. Let me see. Oh, look, here's one.
Tiny Tony died the previous year.
Yeah.
He was Bob Crotchett's older son.
Bob Crotchett.
Bob Crotchett.
Tony Crotchett.
Tony Crotchett. Tony Tim died. Tommy Tim died. And then Tiny Tim was the last one.
Okay. That's good. What is the oldest Christmas decoration still used during your festivities in the Isle of Wight? Is there anything on your Christmas tree that's been there for 44 years or longer?
My brother made an angel from when he was at school. My older brother.
Yeah.
So he's two. So that's he must have been about 4 or 5. And he's a bit older than me. He's been about 42 years old.
That's not bad.
Good, right? What about you?
I was going to say, that's my toy from when I was a kid. That's my donkey, the little donkey. You hate him. That's 50.
A donkey.
That's 50. It's a donkey. I pulled off his ears. He's 50 years old. I was just thinking, there was a, you know, when we put the Christmas tree up, a few things got broken, and there was like a snowman that one of the kids had made that got broken in two. And we said, I said to my wife, should we put glue that back together and keep it? And she said, well, and I said, we can't even remember which one of them made it, to be honest. So we threw it away. So that's, if your parents had made the same decision, you wouldn't have that angel anymore. So we threw it out because, you know, you have so much shit that your kids make. If you can't,
what percentage of your children's things you throw away?
I mean, most. I've got stuff stuck. The good bits, the nicer bits, I stick up on the wall and my wife takes some. But it's literally, she used to come back from the first reception, and she'd have made something every day that was basically, she'd just brought home the teacher's recycling, just stuck together with sellotape. So, and it didn't look like anything when she was four or five. And so we'd keep it for a day or two. And if she didn't play with it, I'd take all the sellotape off and put it in the recycling. So there's a lot of junk that gets made, but there's things you do keep, and they're, you know, this, it's interesting to see, you know, how the human brain and ability exponentially increases, and you just get shocked sometimes. She can read now, and that's sort of just shocking because, you know, 6 months ago she wouldn't have been able to read more than a word or two, and she can properly read. And you go, how did that happen? It wasn't anything to do with me, even though I've been homeschooling again. Anyway, I'm sure it was,
Richard.
It was a little.
You can teach people to read in 6 months.
Your brain's a sponge, isn't it? And you just take it all in, and it's, you know, it's interesting. The little one learns because she's teaching him stuff as well, so he's learning. So it's an advantage being the second one, I think, because you get taught by your older kids if they like each other. They're very sweet together most of the time. Mostly. How much do you know about Geoffrey de Lowood, the 12th century ancestor of yours from Norfolk, or is that a joke?
It's pronounced Geoffrey de Lowood.
Okay.
Not much, but I think my aunt started doing, because Larwood's quite a Norfolk name.
Right.
Because when I was at school, everyone used to say, the teacher said to me, oh, you related to Harold Larwood. You ever heard of Harold Larwood?
Yeah, is he a cricketer?
Yeah, he was a, basically, sounds like a bit of an arsehole.
Was he a bodyline guy?
Yeah, he would just bowl directly at people. Really dangerous.
Yeah.
Really unsportsmanlike. And are you related to the arsehole cricketer? And it turns out, I go, no, I don't think so. Turns out he's like a distant cousin.
Oh, really? Okay.
Who just throw cricket balls directly at someone's head.
Well, then you've got a game where you throw balls at a post. So, you know, it's in the Larwood blood. That.
Well, I never played cricket at school. Right. I always think, you probably think this as well, like, things you haven't tried that you might have been the world champion of.
Yeah.
I could have been a brilliant cricket player. Someone told me, all right, you're, you know, I could have been earning shitloads of money.
Yeah.
In the Ashes and other cricket business, I don't really follow it, but.
I don't think they make that much money. I don't think if you're going for the money, I don't think cricket's the one to go for.
Must make quite a bit though, right?
I mean, they're top players maybe, but I think it's not a huge world sport. You know, you want to get good at football. That's what you want to do.
Too much competition though.
What about motor racing? That would be good. If you, I've never tried motor racing. I reckon I could probably, it's only driving a car, right?
Well, I haven't driven since I passed my test 10 years ago. So, hang on. You should ask to do some car driving acting tomorrow, Richard.
Okay. This is... I was watching
North by Northwest.
Yes.
And they've got some really good... I really like the old car.
Yeah, with the background going.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, we could do that here. I could probably sort that out.
That would be good to do a moving car one next time.
Yeah. I could probably do that. Could probably get, probably even set it up so we're having a lesson in the car. Though I quite like doing it over the internet. Let's talk about how you all got started. You did a sketch show, fantastic sketch group called We Are Clang with Greg Davies and Steve Hall. Greg Davies has gone on to be the Taskmaster. I'm currently in a show with him. Are you still on good terms? I know you've worked on Man Down and stuff, haven't you?
I don't see each other so much, really. I mean, it's just the way it goes, isn't it? You have periods where you're in sketch groups working with people a lot, and then some people are more successful.
How did the group get? I just think you'd be great on Taskmaster, so I'd hope you will be on Taskmaster. But how did you three meet and get together? Was this all at the comedy tutorial thing?
I was Logan Murray's thing, wasn't it? We were doing stand-up.
Right.
And then Greg said to me he really wanted to sort of form a sketch group that would appeal to old ladies. He had a real thing about old, really old ladies. And I said, well, I don't know how I feel about this. And he said, I know Steve Hall. I met Steve, and he's really into, like, old, really, really old ladies. And if we could do some comedy that would appeal to them and just get, you know, I don't, because all the stand-up stuff is young people, and I really want to get to meet properly, like, 70, 80-year-old ladies. So I said, well, I suppose I could do it. I could just be in the background being an idiot, I suppose. Well, yeah, yeah, do that. But as long... So the thing was, you want to go around old people's homes. That's what he wanted, specifically old people's homes. To that's where he thought he would get the best chance.
Yeah,
and he didn't want anyone who he said, look, I don't want to do this work and then have this old lady going off with you. So you're going to have to play a weirdo who's not attractive to them. And Steve, you can just, you know, just do some other stuff.
Yeah.
Just stand there.
Yeah.
And that was how it happened. That was how it happened.
That's how it happened.
It was Greg Davis wanting to...
Wow.
Yeah,
we got an exclusive there. That's incredible. So, incredible news. It was, I mean, as a stage thing, it was huge, right? You won loads of awards. It was like a big thing. You got a... It was fantastic on stage, and then, as happens a lot, it goes to TV, and it kind of did it not quite click on TV.
Rubbish on TV.
Yeah.
Let's not beat you around the bush. That's the annoying thing. You say, yeah. I was in We Are Clang, and then people watch it on the show and go, all right. I mean, it was partly our fault, but partly when we did a stage show, we were quite rude.
Yeah.
And I think it suited us doing live stuff. We should just have recorded a live TV show. Should have just been that. But then we were sort of, they wanted to have a sketch on TV, and they said, oh, here's a format for you, have a town council. And just before, I mean, it was our, we didn't get the tone right. And then just before we were filming was when Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand phoned up the waiter guy from... Yeah. And the BBC absolutely shat their pants. And they came... So we were just rehearsing. We were filming up the weekend, doing one... And they, we would do our tried and tested numbers, and they'd come and go, yeah, you can't do that. That's too rude. You can't do that. So our show changed from being quite a rude show to more like a kid's show.
Right.
And I remember being in the meeting with the BBC exec, with the head BBC commissioner afterwards. He went, yeah, I thought it was a bit too much like a kid's show. And our exec producer just sat there. And I can say this because I don't really have much of a TV crew anyway. And he just sat there and didn't say anything. And I thought, speak up. You're the one who told us to cut that shit out. And yet in the meeting, you're not saying anything. So we just didn't get it right, basically. And we got the tone wrong. And it's quite, and in retrospect, you think, oh, it's a shame, because I think we were really good live when we were at our best.
It was amazing.
I think we were really, really funny. But sadly, all you've got to remember it by is some odd, weird, well, bits fun. Some episodes are all right. Some bits of some episodes are okay.
Yeah.
But it's just frustrating. It wasn't what it should have been.
I think it's hard when, you know, sketch shows on TV, it's very rare that when they take off, they really take off. But it's there's a lot of failed sketch shows and a lot, you know, it's sort of the surprising thing with you is that it was an established team. I think the problem is they often try and put together different people thinking, oh, this will work. And it's not necessarily going to be the case. But yeah, someone meddles with it and changes it. And it's a very hard thing to get going. I think you were in a sketch show that I think is absolutely fantastic. Sorry, I've Got No Head, but that was for kids.
Oh, yes, it was good, yeah.
Yeah, which it's just, I've seen people tweeting about it. It's just been put on BBC iPlayer, whatever it's called now, so as you can watch the whole thing and catch up on that. But that must have been... Well, you did... What happened? You did the first and the third series, but not the second series. Was that... You know, the John Cleese of Sorry, I've Got No Head. You sort of stepped away.
I was doing Clang in between the two. The timings didn't sort of work out.
Right.
But there's so many good people in it, so many talented people in it, and the writing was good.
Yeah.
And we were just churning them out, and that's when it worked. And it was just... I think it was just stupid and fun, and he was lucky to get all those great people around at the same time.
Yeah. But in a way, it sort of feels... I mean, Horrible Histories has gone on to be like this phenomenon and spawned all this other stuff as well. Rightly so, I think. But it feels like that. I guess in a way, you were so many people in Sorry, I've Got No Head, and you're all pulling in different directions and doing different things that you probably weren't going to become a team into the future. You know what I mean? But it was such a strong cast before everyone was really famous as well. But pretty much everyone in it is... You know, you'd recognise now, I think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was on the same time as they would film Horrible Histories in the same studio.
Right.
And that would just literally come in and win loads of awards. Then we'd come into our shit changing room as next. Sort of the slightly worse ones in the same studio where the heating didn't work. We had to say to the producer, oh, please, can we, you know, can get someone to fix the heating? Someone broke into the studio, walked in, walked straight into the dressing rooms, nicked my wallet, went down the local Lloyd's and tried to get a grand and a half out on my car, nicked my phone, and the producer says to me, oh, are you insured? I went, I think that's your job, maybe, to insure it. And also he said, why don't you have your phone on you? And I said, have you not seen that I'm dressed in shorts and a vest? Am I supposed to put my phone up my arse? What? It was so low budget, and so you'd do literally 24 pages a day or something crazy like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was amazing it turned out so well.
Yeah.
But there we go.
You should get the guys back together, do another series of you were all really old.
Really old, tired.
I think what's interesting about you, I don't think TV has managed... You know, you've done lots of TV. I saw you... You did Drunk History with Olivia Colman, I noticed, as well. I wanted to say that. So there's a picture of you and Olivia Colman in Drunk History.
And it looks like I'm really successful. If you see that. Oh, people go on IMDb and go, oh. He yucks with Oscar winners. Very interesting.
She went on to win an Oscar in 4 years after that. And, you know, you're doing a game about poo. You're doing a poo.
I'm doing a game about poo.
So, you know, it's the same.
Road full of old people.
But I think looking at all the stuff you're doing, right, which is all this, it's like this fizzing energy and so creative and inventive, like it literally inventive in some cases. And I don't think TV can really bottle that up. And I think there's a part of me, and what I'm trying to do, especially during lockdown and while we're online, is kind of highlight people who are doing great stuff online, but you know, because TV's sort of moved into this area where it's very difficult to be inventive on TV. I think it's very difficult to be given the space to try things out. It's actually to the advantage of comedy, I think, maybe not to comedians, that TV can't deal with them, because then they go off and make their own stuff. And you know, people like you and Michael Spicer, Bilal Zaffer, you know, all these people who are working on these interesting shows, because TV can't find a place to put you officially all the time, and you do, and you'd work a lot, so it's not like you're not working, but I don't think anyone's ever bottled the genius on TV, but you're able to do that online, and that's it's to the advantage of comedy.
I love YouTube. I just think it's if I don't really watch much TV, I just watch YouTube.
Yeah.
And when I was a teenager, he said to me, oh, yeah, there's this platform where you can make stuff and just put any old shit out there. Like you do, you're prolific as well. And I love the fact I love making stuff on YouTube. I should promote my walk. I do walks as well.
Yes, yes.
I'll send you one of my Cool Dudes Walking Club.
Okay.
I made rubbish. Everything I make is rubbish. I walked the South Downs Way and just filmed that. That was great.
Sure.
But there's some brilliant YouTube channels. The guy, have you ever watched a guy called GeoWizard?
No.
He's done this possibly the best series on YouTube. It's called The Straight Line Mission, where he tries to walk across Wales in a straight line. Yeah. And he's done all the music himself, this 80s arcade music. He's tried Wales twice. He's just doing Norway. Please watch Straight Line Mission Across Wales. And a guy's called GeoWizard, and he films on his GoPro. And you watch stuff like that on YouTube and think, this is better than the stuff on TV. This is so... You feel like you're in there. You feel like you're him as he tries to evade these farmers that he's trespassing, running through his hedges and climbing up cliffs and almost getting killed. You wouldn't get insurance for that on TV.
No.
And B, they wouldn't get past the second... They'd go, oh, what? Who is this guy? Yeah, can we not get someone... Can we not get BBC Face to do it? Or can we not get this? It's just...
But then I think that's why, you know, but yeah, well, I think you're right. And I think that's also why TV is sort of on the way out, because it's, but I think like in, it's amazing to, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, if there'd been as many comedians and they weren't able to get on TV, there was no outlet really. There was stand up, you know, you could go and do stand up, or you could go and do some crazy Ken Campbell 24-hour play or something. You could do something, but there's this outlet now, and it's better than the what's on TV, and it's more interesting than what's on TV, and there's a worldwide audience to find it. So it's like, you know, TV's in trouble, really. That's the irony. And I'm not sure. I think we're reaching the tipping point, no pun intended, where, you know, doing stuff yourself is going to be more commercially successful than doing stuff on TV anyway. So, TV at the moment is really just a way to advertise yourself. If you're going to go on to a tour, really, that's the only way to make proper money out of TV now, unless you're Gary Lineker. Are you Gary Lineker?
I am Wayne Lineker.
Okay, well, that's
Gary Lineker's charismatic brother.
So, you know, I think it's so exciting when you've, but, you know, like, I know you and I've seen loads of your stuff and I often retweet your videos. And then when I actually come to research you, I go, fucking hell, look at all this other stuff I had no idea about. And so there's these vast kind of, you know, fields to discover from all lots of different comedians and lots of different people out there. And, I watched your short film that you put together, which I think, again, did that come out of another podcast, Marek Makes a Movie? But that was that was a really good short film.
No, it was.
Oh, man, it was really enjoyable.
I tried to do a podcast to raise money for a film.
Yeah.
I wrote this script about a guy who originally, he's got a brain injury and everyone he sees is a mannequin. So I wrote this thing, which is brilliant. I reckon I can do this for like maybe $2,000, $3,000 at a push. I started doing this podcast again. This money's going to roll in. And I raised about $600 or $700. And I already bought. And so I thought, I've got to do a film now. And I haven't got any money. What can I do? Oh, just do a vlogging film around my parents' house.
It's good. It's really funny.
I don't know. You're too kind.
It's really funny. It's good. But also, I just think it, you know, it looks, I mean, it doesn't look homemade, though. It looks like properly made. But it, you know, it's obviously,
it does look a bit homemade.
It's not got a massive budget. But I don't think that matters. I was talking to Alistair Green about this. I think that was last week. And, you know, it's the ideas are more important than how it looks than the production.
His stuff is incredible, just on his phone. On his phone.
But it's great. The ideas, and your ideas are all great, and you've got so many ideas. Like the fact that you have lost all that bedtime Tory stuff, that's just something you threw away. And on every episode of that has like 5 stories in it that could easily be something else. So, you know, you've got all this creative energy, and if it wasn't for the internet, and if it wasn't for the fact that you could just get stuff out there, I don't think there'd be any, you know, there wouldn't be anywhere to get this, because you wouldn't go to TV and go, can I do my walks, or can I do my, you know, my film about this or about mannequins?
That's my problem about walking programmes while I'm on it. Every single walking programme on TV, I don't do any bloody walking. I've gone on long walks. That's why I make walking videos. They just go, oh, I'm here in so-and-so doing the South Downs Way. I'm going to go and speak to this butcher. And now we're going to get on a train. And now we're going to get on a boat. Do the bloody walking. Sorry, I get really cross about it.
Yeah. You tried to win Sports Personality in 2014 as well. As I noticed that.
We both tried.
I was annoyed not to get Sports Personality this year.
I'm surprised you weren't up for it, actually.
I mean, I'm surprised. Maybe I'll be the team task. Maybe, you know, they sometimes have a team one, don't they? So I might be the whole team of all the snooker
players. But which Richard would win. That's
well, I think
question.
If it's the team, it's all because there's 40 me's now, and over the lockdown, I've been playing with up to 40 me's. So that.
Why don't
could
you
be
do a sports Richard personality?
Yeah, I could do my own one.
I would very much like to see that. The nominations, who's up for it?
I think Mia Levin would probably win out of all the... She's the best. She's the most popular, I think. But I think a lot of it... I've got a lot of male, sort of heterosexual male viewers. And I think they just it's a bit of eye candy for the Mia Levin. So I think that's what that's about.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the episode.
That's good. Well, look, I've got to get up and learn my lines. I can't stay talking to you. I've got to learn. I've got to go to bed. I've got to get up at something at 5:30. It's terrible being an actor, isn't it? I've got to be in somewhere in Essex in 8:00 tomorrow morning. What's
Remember
that about?
What your first line is?
Oh, my darling girl, something like that.
No,
my girl.
So you've got to establish why
my
you're
girl.
Only 13 years older. And Nick Helm.
Oh, yes. I fucked their mum when I was 12.
Say that.
Okay.
Ask the director, so I've got a few ideas. Say that.
I've
got
something
I want to bring to the character.
Cool. Well, look, everyone go and buy Poo Man. Everyone check out Marek's many websites, YouTube videos, Cool Dudes Walking Club. Go and play Wolfsball. It's really genuinely looks fantastic. Anyone can play that. You'd all love it. We didn't get to talk about hardly anything you've done. And there's loads more stuff in there. You have Boris Johnson. You've done all sorts of stuff. Been in loads of sketch shows that nothing happened with. It's been good. You've had a good career. Look, I hope you'll carry on doing all this stuff. It's amazing. And you're an absolute genius. And you have to know that.
And you are too, Richard. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
It's my absolute pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, Rod Gilbert. Do tune in for that. Ladies and gentlemen, the fantastic Marek Larwood. See you next time. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Marek Larwood. Thank you, as always, to Pest, the popular music band, for playing this tune for us. It's delightful. I'm indebted to my friend and producer and director, Chris Evans, not that one, without whom none of this would be possible. Thank you very much to everyone at ACAST. Thank you, everyone, to the British Comedy Guide, especially. Thank you to all the guys who usually would have been filming the shows. Poor old incompetent sound man George. What's become of him? Probably dead. This is Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Do check out my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/RKHerring. You can see all sorts of stuff. Snooker on Mondays usually, Rahalastapa's usually on Wednesdays, and Twitch of Fun usually on Thursdays. Lots and lots of stuff there if you want to catch up. You can see stuff in the video section. And why not subscribe? If you're with Amazon Prime, you can subscribe every month and give me £3.50 at no cost to yourself. Imagine that. All right. Have a lovely Christmas, my fan friends. Goodbye. If you're listening to this after Christmas, have a good Christmas next year or birthday. Or just have a weekend off. Enjoy yourself. Take care. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.